Sure hope this is working. It looks like it.
To preserve and protect those species. sector. Does everyone understand and agree with the case?
No, I don't understand.
Any further discussion on the motion? I think we're through with the polls now, if you want to go into the chairman.
And they said there are three specific comments that pertain to the statement on purpose. We got that introduction, one on purpose. First, under the subheading one, it is unclear what method will determine which fish and wildlife habitats are significant. Further, by establishing a goal of protection of significant fish and wildlife habitats, you have removed the option for local government evaluation and consideration and land use planning and management. My comment, under subheading one, significant fish and wildlife habitats are protected and considered in land use planning and management. I feel that they should be indicated on county maps, and those areas established by testimony and public hearing. I think that would put right back in the hands of local government. So I found nothing wrong with this, and, but I feel that since we brought it out, it should be discussed.
Well, I just point out that those habitats are, I thought that was a inventory of the zoo.
I think at this point, do you have a habitat in the significant or special interest habitat map?
When I first mentioned my review criteria 5, these maps here indicate those significant habitats. I was going to try to get the presentation so this would be on the channel.
I think it's really important that we identify what we're talking about in habitats now so that people might be a little more at ease. Because I can think of a band-tailed pigeon and the habitat that that thing might take 1,000 acres of land. So, okay. Yes?
Just in further discussion of WCAS comment, their statement that we have removed the option for local government evaluation, consideration, land use planning, and management, I think is entirely erroneous because all we're doing is indicating where those are. And the problem in the past has been that any local government jurisdiction doesn't have any access to information as to how their system fits into the rest of coastal ecology. And I think that's what the point is, to indicate on a broader scale than any one jurisdiction might have access to just what they're dealing with. I don't see that as a valid
argument. We didn't have that on the map that we have in country right now. As Lori mentioned, you know, the wildlife that are on the emergency
up. And I think really the very best way to do it on this team. Why do you want to go ahead and do it?
Well, let's deal then, we'll see what happens. The Wilbur trees weren't clear to that tonight.
Yeah.
Well, it seems to me that this will change from generation to generation. At a previous meeting, we had Fish and Wildlife working maps, which were all colored. And I sketched briefly some of the characteristics that were related to the habitat types. And I mentioned one, that there were habitats, you could think of them in terms of a grading, that they weren't uniformly distributed up and down the coast. And I mentioned there the true fur habitat that was distributed from north to south on the coast, and by altitude, there was an element of commonness, such as the coastal shore pine spruce that was a linear band down the coast generally. And then another idea of predominance. We mentioned Douglas fir and trailing blackberry. It represents this wide area, or it did on those colored maps. It's 80%, I think the figure was, in this whole coastal zone. Now, as a result of the Fish and Wildlife inventory, taking a lot of factors into consideration. Some of you may not have your inventory here, but the inventory team selected 11 criteria by which the habitats were examined and analyzed and evaluated. And as a result of that procedure, 14 habitats were identified as being significant. This happened to mesh with the phase one policy direction. And if you look over to the first policy we have, you can see the large number of references from phase one that was talking about significant habitats. Well, here, as a result of the inventory process, and as a result of the phase one policy procedure, was a fit. We were talking about significant types, significant habitats, particular type of habitat. Now, that list includes, in footnote two, you'll see the list there. One, kelp beds, methods, rock, intertidal. Now, these maps here, the textured parts are all the habitats. The parts I've colored in green are the habitats labeled as significant. It includes the items there in footnote two. And we get another thing surfacing here as a result. There's an interface, and one of the primary factors in the coastal zone is that some of these significant habitats come at the interface of land and water. There's a high degree of interaction right here. So you see open sand, rocky tidal areas, the kelp beds, that's where the abalone are, et cetera, are important. That's one thing. The bed of brook habitat out here was another item. On these maps, wet meadows, inland marsh, in the estuary zone, which are blocks, and you can look in the back of the inventory for more detail for clam beds, eelgrass beds, et cetera. These are identifiable as per the definition in the back of the glossary. You'll see the significant habitat, the definition of a significant habitat, is a land or water area where sustaining the natural resource characteristics is important or essential to the production and maintenance of identifiable species of aquatic life and wildlife populations. And the sea streams, the anadromous fish distribution, they have to have those for migration, spawning, et cetera. Those are identifiable. That's probably the key element in significant habitats. Now, Wilmer mentioned the anadromous fish distribution. You'll notice in the appendix in the back, the bat-billed pigeon is a bird that they use primarily the Douglas fir habitat for nesting and feeding, but they have to have water, they have to have brick. And so the identifiable area are the mineral springs where they get the water and the brick. It's not, we're not talking about their whole nesting and feeding habitat. We're talking about that one habitat that for them is critical, it's obligate. They have to have that habitat. If those places are developed or too much harassment occurs, those birds will have to shift to other habitats to make pressure on other animals. So the focus, the thrust of the policy, at least the significant habitat, the method by which it's derived, is to focus on those areas that are critical, the significant ones. They're identifiable.
I agree with your process that is significant. Now, what are they? Are they on a map? Or has something to do with the map?
Well, this one here, figure 13, in the appendices of the inventory, has the ones for the Vanhale Pigeon, for the active fall inland, that's spotted owls. Now, this data is a philosophical argument as to why the data is not, say, on this scale of a map here, where it would be very simple for somebody to merely find the spot and hike up or do whatever they please. That data is on file with Fish and Wildlife, and they will work with county or local planners to identify the spot so that they can be taken into consideration and managed. That kind of data for those appendices. These other items, some of it is just detail. It's very
explosive. Now, remembering of all the areas that we identify are going to overlap with that, that's a concern for our
listeners. Well,
I'd like to bring up one point. By our very process of identifying some of these areas, we may be threatening the endangered.
Well, that's what you just spoke to, that the exact locations are noted.
Yeah, okay. I don't really find it an eagle nest. I'm working with biologists that I worked with before on different surveys. And everyone I've ever been associated with is a very pleasant. One nest is just where they move.
Well, okay. And speaking to Martin Webb's concern that he expressed in the last meeting, no, I don't think all the areas will overlap. In the inventory, there are certain kinds of habitats, certain associations of factors that make a particular habitat type significant. And that's why I picked up these maps right in the middle, is to serve as an indication that it belongs to certain stream corridors, and it's not going to be 100% of every area that's identified. I believe it is on a smaller scale than that, such as here in the under the footnote 2 there, it's a estuary that includes four types, eelgrass beds, clam beds. It's just identifying the type and where those are. Within the 3 mile zone, that would include some of the rocky intertidal, kelp beds, and benthic rocks. In the 3 mile zone, there are this significant pile here, further out than 3 miles, but there are several types there that would, I think, okay. Kelp bed, benthic rock, rocky intertidal, and rocky intertidal would include the offshore island sacks and reefs.
I'm going to ask Chuck, was there any identification of the estuary of any significant habitat?
I didn't hear all that.
The Delta area of every estuary, in the ocean, right, have those been identified as significant habitats?
No. You mean the plume that would result from sediment? No. Those are not identified by this right here. I think the only one he has there is the rocky.
Benthic rock. That's my question. Any further questions? I realize I digest exactly where all those are.
So I just start reading all the stamps?
Yeah.
Okay. Number one, state and local government shall protect the significant aquatic life and wildlife habitat in the Oregon coastal zone, identify, describe, and review the inventory. The management plan and regulations written to adversely affecting areas. Furthermore, the state shall develop programs and incentives to improve the restoration of potentially significant habitat areas.
Number two. Question only one thing. How can you say shall, period, and I can take it. I'm really not sure that this commission is in a position to dictate to the legislature or anybody else that they shall. I certainly feel that you should say we should. But when you say shall, I doubt if we have that authority.
Well, I think, if I were to respond to that, I think the thrust of some of the policies and how the policies will be handled is that we should use the shall. You are making an assertion to the state legislature. They will consider the assertion, and they will act on the assertion. They will not think it should or shall result. I think, going my own argument, the assertion shall is much stronger than it should.
It doesn't really make that much difference if you sell a little bit of the highway to pop how it shall, like, you see what you get.
It's very important. Okay. State and local government shall manage habitats forever to be consistent with change as a forever. State and local government shall manage habitats for threatened and endangered species and other species special interests as identified in the OCC and DC inventory in such a manner to ensure preservation of the species in order to close to
them. I'm sure.
In such a manner to preserve
these things. I don't think you see any sure at all. You didn't mean the same thing.
Well, you might be sure, but you're not sure it's going to do that.
That change? Okay. Necessary action for local policies. Local units of government shall incorporate the comprehensive land and water use plan consideration for significant habitat areas. Habitat for rare and native species of special interest and shall specify useful locations for these habitat areas. The state of Oregon shall develop plan and management criteria for both the preservation of species and regulation of adverse impacts in significant habitat areas and the required these criteria to be included in the local comprehensive plan.
One of the things that I'm the executive board of the Oregon City is one of the major complaints that city governments have in the state, county governments in the same position, is the legislature coming up with this kind of language.
without any funds to do such. I don't want to get into economics right now, but this sort of thing is a way to kill the bill from the, to kill the measure. If you start laying onus on local government, use government shell, and over comprehensive land awareness plan, we're getting sick and tired of that. And this problem, I don't know what the solution is, but I'd like to point out the problem.
I agree that the state calls giving responsibility to somebody who's never given any money to do it. But in this case, I assume that's what the coastal management looking for. But in this case, we're talking more about a mapping process than an awareness process. It's not as though we're going to cut the, I'm saying that we shall cut the crime rate by 10%. I agree with what you're saying in general terms. I think in this specific case, it's not going to be a hardship on the municipality.
Well, I just give you an example. Wheeler County, they have the funds to hire a consultant who would say, what is significant impact for
business?
I don't
read that. And I think the onus should be upon the guy that wants to use that habitat to prove that it is. So we can improve through the Fasano decision that it is in fact from the public interest that he knew what he proposed to do.
I'm surprised that the objection point you raised at this point. Somehow I'm involved in city government now after the last election. I found out that right away the city government is bankrupt. At least in our area it is. And when it says the state shall develop the management criteria, and then it says that the local government shall require all those criteria be included without my knowing what that criteria is going to be or what it's going to cost, and then I get around to agreeing with you, Paul, very much. I just have an open-ended.
Mr. Chairman, when you start telling the local entities that they shall do this or they shall do that, people try to program. I've changed my attitude quite a bit after having served in the legislature and literally passed laws or voted for laws that require companies to spend money, whether they have it or not. And we're doing the same thing here. We're telling the local entities that they shall do so. And I think it's the greatest boon for the consultant businesses in this nation that these things referred. Because the city is going to have to hire somebody to do it. We're paying $40,000 for the comprehensive health plan of this county. So the state tells us we have to have. And you're going to be doing the same thing with the city and various other entities that are going to be. And I think the language makes it better.
Mr. Chairman. The question that's being raised here is a very basic, universal one, and I agree with the premise that when state mandates cost the local government, it should also furnish funds to implement those programs and policies. However, I think we're talking about an individual policy here that identifies a part of a work process that will go on anyway, and only inserts another consideration. That's what that is asking for. Incorporate in land water use plans, consideration for, and I might disagree with Jack slightly in that I don't think it's so much an identification thing in that process or by the applicant as much as it is an incorporation of the inventories that this process that we're going to do has made into their comprehensive plan, where in fact an endangered species nesting or watering area is identified within a county or a city, it should be recognized in their plan. It should be mapped into their base map. And there should be a location made of it in the content of the plan. I don't see it that specifically mandated cost beyond that which the fund will be available.
Thank you.
ordinance incorporate a comprehensive land and water use plan consideration for significant habitat and whatnot. It was worked, to me, very clearly without the shall at all.
I think that under the category of necessary actions, if we don't, in our process, under a policy, candidly indicate what actions are necessary to make that policy become a reality, we're shortchanging local government, because it would be based on necessary actions that a dollar cost can be identified, and local government can insist that funds are provided to them. If we remove any mandate for necessary actions, we're saying there are no costs. And therefore, we're assuming that the policy will implement itself. I say that there will be, for every meaningful policy, a necessary action, and the necessary action should be honestly recognized and in such a way listed so that the cost can be assessed and charged back to the state or federal agency. And that is presumed responsibility to my local government.
Mr. Chairman, whenever you give a bureaucrat the word shall, that gives them a lot of power. And I know that we're going to have to work with the state on the interpretation right now. We instructed our VA to take the course if necessary. So when you put something in there, one person said, well, I don't think that. Is that somebody else said they will agree to open it up for lawyers to make money and the cost of cities and counties money? You put shall in there, and you've got a definite something for a bureaucrat to get right down your neck.
Mr. Chairman, it seems to me that this is the only area that is going to take additional funding, so it seems to me there should be some place within the whole report that addresses this total issue and state that the legislature should consider the financial, additional financial burden on local government relative to adopting this legislation, and address that in some part of the total report.
I can be the candidate. This is put in every, some of our ones already in county working with the funding, but I can also do the three over there where it's the shall is mandatory, is mandatory. Take your assessment office for an instance. It said you shall hire one appraiser for every $30,000 valuation, or 30 million valuation.
How you doing, Chick?
And that is mandatory. You got 30 million valuation, you got to appraise. The law will still happen. And the state says you still have it, and you have to have it. But they don't appraise you one time, you can't even sell it. So this word shall is mandatory.
Down the man, you should go ahead and leave it as a solid over here, so go on and make it for the rain. Stay shot and strike it off and put it in the air.
Perhaps for clarification, perhaps I think the staff might be able to speak better to this than I, but if you look at Senate Bill 100, which in fact, I think you're developing the policy before. They will go to the legislature in LCDC and then back to the county level. That legislation says that the county shall implement these goals as adopted. Now, if these are going to be adopted by you and then LCDC and the legislature, the language is already there that says that they shall be. I don't want to issue a ballot, but I think they've already addressed it here. Well, that's part of the funds that you're going to be looking for.
Well, I understand. That's probably true. If you look at LCDC, but I don't think there's much to be reformed before LCDC, and I don't see that our job is to report the legislature how we thought this program should go, how it goes. And I do think that the legislature at that time could not give us any direction at that time to make tailor our program altogether to LCDC because it wasn't in existence at that time. But I still feel our job here is to come up with the best possible program that we feel is going to work on first.
I guess the point is, well, heard that if you don't say shall and you leave it open, then you don't have anything. So what have you done?
Chairman, I think we're already pointing at the wrong place in
under this policy. If we're to take the shall out, we have to take the shall out of the policy statement itself. Because on page 2 or page 3, the necessary action is merely the assessment of the effect of the policy. And it would be dishonest to take it out here and leave it in on the first page. And I thought we had already agreed to leave it in on the first page. I'm not trying to turn it to that. We're going to leave it on the first page. It would be a contradiction to take it out on the second page.
Front back.
This point I'm going to get to the position again, where either someone make a motion to change the policy or a piece of...
I'm going to put the document in actions and change the prejudice in there.
Inconsistency with it.
Well, I think we have a question that consistent with the ground, there also is a moment of vision. Is that agreed with you? I think I'll have that.
Are there any?
We agreed to. We're going to...
Did it exist?
No, we're going to say, hey, she is making a plea to have general agreement amongst the commission, and they're saying threatened instead of rare.
I had also moved to adopt the necessary action as well.
What we're hoping to do here is avoid adopting as written, and if there's no objection to the way it's written, then I'm considering we adopt it.
Aye.
That's the motion.
Which written?
The only motion we've been asking for is if someone would change it.
I moved the big shall out of it.
Any suggestions for some other question?
May. In that last sentence.
On what? Yeah, we're getting out of the way.
Area where it says habitat areas that shall require. Insert criteria included in local comprehensive plan.
Saying that should read now and may require that these criteria be included in local comprehensive plan. Now, are you thinking of the last one?
We're thinking of the last.
The last show, yeah. I have a blue Toyota station wagon, LKE160, with the headlights on.
I'm going to take them all out. Motion on the desk to remove one. Let's have a question now. We got to settle.
All right. All in favor of taking out the shall, raise your right hand.
Which shall in there?
Just to go through these first, because I think what has been said here, and I agree with it, either recommended action, every one of you will say it should, right? So it's going to come back to the general question of whether they should take it or not.
The second added sentence is, in particular, wherever appropriate, state and local governments should create camps and restore spawning areas and coastal streams. It's an added part.
By Collier?
Yes. It is asked to include that as part of recommended action one.
Would you be able to?
I'll read the whole thing together. State of Oregon should cooperate with local units of government in developing and carrying out habitat improvement and restoration programs. In particular, wherever appropriate, state and local governments should create camps and restore spawning areas and coastal streams.
How does that differ from number two recommended action?
I don't think it just puts a specific. What's your feeling on the commission on this issue?
I would make a motion that that be adopted.
Is there a second?
Number three.
Yeah, this is the date on that card, or is it?
Right.
Any discussion, question? All of the fairly added.
Aye.
Opposed?
The Oregon Fish Commission should establish a program for management of marine vegetation. Number four, local units of government should approve, develop, and freshwater and shoreline which will result in alterations in water characteristics. Only if proposed uses or activities will be conducted in a manner that minimizes adverse effects on significant aquatic life and wildlife habitat. Number five, state of Oregon and local units of government should discourage agricultural, forestry, and urban development practices which threaten significant aquatic life and wildlife habitat for reasonable alternative practices exist.
In other words, Mr. Chairman, if there are no reasonable alternative practices, we don't have to worry about it.
Well, number six, I'd like to read the footnote on that one there. Alternative practices are described in the Oregon Forest Practices Act by the Oregon Department of Environmental Collection and Treatment of Agricultural Waste and by the Soil Conservation Service for Urban Development and Mineral Watershed Treatment. Those, the recommended actions stem from the Pavement Preliminary Group Policy. Number six, state of Oregon and the government should provide public access to non-infringing and public observation facilities in significant habitat areas in a manner which avoids adverse effects on aquatic life and wildlife resources that provide safeguards for public observation.
Now, just looking back, is there any question about the shall or should now need to refer? Remember that the recommended action is not as opposed to necessary actions that carry out.
To me, that particular sentence negates itself. I would provide access to anything without eventually affecting it somewhat.
Seems as though that might possibly be better written.
Could you itemize?
I think we may have a serious problem with the eagle and everything, unless you can come up with some different wording that you'd be better off with Stanson than the concern to do it, because I guess that we rewrite.
Well,
you couldn't
say
minimize
rather than avoidance.
Yeah.
All right. Do you have someone put that in front of me? Some of you.
Sure.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Where's Wayne? And Linda.
Yeah, I'd like to ask a question as to what the thrust of this is. Is it to say that the access should be provided and as a parallel or a subpart, you should minimize adverse effects, or is the thrust of it that where access is provided, one should minimize? I think there's a difference there, and I can't tell.
Some of the recommended actions you'll notice are referenced as to their origin. And that particular policy was combined from
five calls from phase one. And when I read policy, my perception is that it minimizes the impact.
Where an access is necessary or is already there.
Correct.
I wish it would be reworded to make that clear, because it starts off talking about providing the access, and I don't think that was the purpose.
I think.
Yes, could we have, I would like to make a motion to the effect of that be reworded to reflect that concern, that where an access is provided, it be done in a manner to have minimal adverse effects, and then that might become before vision getting for people.
Mr. Johnson, I'd like to offer a question. Mr. Second, the first one.
I'll say it.
Well, it's, I probably don't need to make this comment since it's been moved in second. But Collier Buffington and I discussed this, and part of the intent of this is to ensure an additional public access along the streams and private property to public property, where the public property is sewed up. And I would hate for us to lose the dual meaning of this particular policy.
You're speaking in opposition to my motion.
Yes. I think that we're talking about two things here, and at least two of us have been quite concerned about limited public access, particularly in Eastern Oregon, where there's a Bureau of Land Management property surrounded, or at least in part, surrounded by private property, and access is limited. The public can't even get back to the property.
I was reading this particularly in the light of the fact it says in significant habitat areas, and I think I have no quarrel with what you're saying either. We do need further access in some areas, but in the significant areas, for instance, in the habitat of critical species, one does not necessarily wish to provide more. I just wish it could be sorted out a little bit. I'm not speaking against further public access.
I'd like to have you remember that the job of drawing up the criteria for the management and protection of significant habitat areas was already assigned to the state, so I'm sure that we can take care of that particular concern. I think that one thing that needs to be spelled out here is there is an implementation schedule.
necessary action. State of Oregon, through the Oregon Fish and Wildlife Commission, shall establish allowable harvest for those fish and wildlife species in commercial and recreational waters, taking into account the impact of harvest levels, the impact of land and water use on fish and wildlife resources, and the biological factors that conserve supply.
I was always under the impression that we're doing that to these fish and wildlife just playing out of the way. That was up to you. My bad, Ronnie.
Mike, I didn't quite hear you.
I said, I've always been under the impression that they had to leave on you, maybe you can try to.
Well, yeah, basically, what this policy does is reaffirm the existing statutes of both fish and wildlife commissions currently operating. Now, if you didn't agree with the existing statute, my only thing, this is basically what they're.
I think there's a lot of error under, probably didn't agree with you on that, but we have to be all of the state working.
This year.
The breakdown that they mentioned once before in fish and wildlife management, and I guess we can't address it in the policy if we ever did. The system is that even though we have a good statute on the books, I guess in the judicial system, people kill 7 or 8 deer in 2 hours.
Well, in general, maybe the case, perhaps in all states, we have a particular urgency establishing harvest levels for food fish. Things like that hasn't been done. So this may be a direction to our agency, for example, and say settle in on bottom fish. Is that what that means?
Well, I would hope they would include establishing something in offshore fishery that would prevent it from disappearing. It was asked for in the mileage.
I'm talking about sport use and other ones. It hasn't passed in legislature, so this may direct it at you.
Raise one question. What happened to our policy on the offshore fishery? Was it discarded or is it supposed to be hidden when we made a very small presentation in Washington, D.C., 200 miles on the offshore fishery? We made a very small presentation on the report and all of a sudden we didn't mention it. I think that's it.
Did that come to mind?
There was one policy concerning sustained yield. This is the policy. You'll notice there's fish and wildlife. Well, I guess it is.
There's not a reaction to the actions on page 6, but it doesn't say it's not returned at all.
Well, what I'm saying is that I think everyone on the Oregon Coast, I'm pretty sure that 90% of the people on the Oregon Coast are concerned about the lack of basic latitude of both state agencies and the federal agencies of what is going on offshore. And I realize that in the case of Oregon, that they haven't been funded enough to do something about it. And by the same token, despite everything we do on the land, we may lose the whole battle out to sea.
In the background section of this policy, I think we addressed that. The thrust of the policy is that that kind of establishment and control, and some of the factors and some of the things needed to do that are addressed in the recommended action. Recommended action one, state of Oregon should encourage and cooperate with the international management of offshore fishery on a sustainable basis to check the viability of the fishing stocks. More on doing research. Involvement of federal government in management of particular fisheries. Supplementation of fish stocks, stand research and use to use unemployed fish stocks, educational enforcement programs to help in carrying out the intent of aquatic life and wildlife regulation management.
I just put it this way, that there will be a policy submitted to this body covering that situation.
First off, the policy you're talking about was in Continental Shelf, and here now
perhaps as a commission, you want to make that a policy to carry. In other words, have it carry more weight than just a written action. The state of Oregon should encourage and cooperate in the international management of the offshore ocean fishery on a sustained yield basis to protect the viability of the remaining fishery stocks.
In my mind, I would have said that we should participate in the law of seas office. Going on for years, and meantime, four or three of our fishery populations are completely disappeared. They're still talking to us. When will we get through? And in the case of New England states, they've lost many fisheries. While the international law of the sea conference goes on and on and on.
Do you have a suggestion for us, operator?
I really don't this time. I think we need to go back to the next meeting.
I wonder if the chairman would have any working on language. Meantime, so we do have something to.
So you had that one that you may even look at this several but I thought we gave some very strong testimony in Washington, and I think we need to follow up on our policies.
Policy probably ought to be on the continental shelf. It's more appropriate on the continental shelf, the reference back here. How about putting the recommended action back on Fish and Wildlife and policy on the continental shelf?
I'll come to the meeting when I'm back to the
All we have left are the remaining recommended actions, I believe, for those who have called the deal.
All right, I want to get back to one thing. I think it's a terrible dispute about the implementation of any one of these sections.
Up in the